This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Binge, cleave. Binge, binge, cleave. Binge.
Place to Be Nation Pop. Welcome back to Binge, Please. This is episode 2. I'm your host, Todd Weber. And the powers that be have decided that we are going to do more Binge Please shows. I didn't get canceled after the first one, despite being a solo podcast. How are you? Thank you for checking out my show. Binge Please is a show that talks about streaming television. You know, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, and the like. Chances are, if you are listening to a podcast, you're probably hip and cool enough to be streaming TV somehow, somewhere. So this show applies to you. Binge Please brings you news about streaming services. We look at shows that are being rotated in and out, off and on your favorite streaming services. And we review bingeable TV shows or movies with a guest, hopefully. And this time I do have a guest, but we'll get to that in just a second. In the weeks to come, we'll be adding social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Not up and running yet, but for now, if you'd like to give me input or feedback, just like Place to Be Nation Pop on Facebook. That's a good place to do it there. On today's episode of Binge Please, I'll be talking specifically about what's coming and going in the month of April on Netflix. Talk about One Day at a Time's cancellation, new show on Hulu called Shrill. We'll talk about the new Stranger Things trailer that dropped this week. Talk about Mindy Kaling getting a brand new show on Netflix. Brand new Amy Schumer stand-up special. We'll talk about the debut. Look at early reviews of the Motley Crue biopic, not biopic, called The Dirt. We'll also talk about the dropping of the new season of The O. Talk about The Inventor on HBO, show I saw not long ago. Talk about Leaving Neverland and Vice News Tonight. We will also be welcoming our first guest to talk about Abducted in Plain Sight. That guest is Place to Be Nation original, Mr. Jordan Duncan. But first, here's what's coming and going in the month of April on Netflix. Coming April 1st, Ultraman, Netflix original. This looks to be an anime based on the original Japanese classic live-action show Ultraman. Not something I have a lot of reference for, but I do remember it being a thing and having some cool toys. Also April 1st, Across the Line, the Woodward Bernstein, Robert Redford, and Dustin Hoffman film All the President's Men, timely. Bonnie and Clyde from 1967, Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway, and Deliverance is coming out April 1st as well. Nick Duke favorite film. Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood, Less Said the Better. Evolution, Freddy vs. Jason, hello Jason Sherman. Friday the 13th from 2009 will be there. I Am Legend, Will Smith. Lakeview Terrace, Monster House, Obsessed, Penelope, Stoner Classic, Pineapple Express, Pokemon, the series, Sun and Moon, Season 2, P.S. I Love You, Snatch, Brad Pitt, doing an indecipherable accent, Spy Kids, something my kids watched way too much, and you want to see some bad special effects and a bad story and a bad everything, Spy Kids is for you. But, you know, it probably, you know, if you're a child or my kids, they liked it, it had its purpose. Shark Boy and Lava Girl was another one of those great ones. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D also that day, probably not in 3D, but you get the picture. The Bone Collector, The Fifth Element, Bruce Willis, Mila Jovovich, there we go. Golden Compass, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 1 and 2, and Tom Cruise Valkyrie. That's just April Fool's Day. Wow. April 2nd. Kevin Hart has a brand new comedy special called Irresponsible coming. April 3rd, Susanna, Buried Alive. I don't know what that is. Is it Susanna Hoffs from the Bengals, Buried Alive? I don't think so, but she could use her eternal flame to keep her lit. April 5th, the return of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Season 2. Here in Shipka from Mad Men, play Sabrina. Saw a couple episodes of the first. My wife did see the entire first part one of the season. Liked it quite a bit, and we did not like Riverdale, and this is kind of a step above. Also, a show called In the Shadows drops that day. Legacies Season 1, Netflix original called Our Planet. Persona Collection, also a Netflix original. Roman Empire, Caligula, The Mad Emperor, another Netflix original. And Spirit Riding Free, Season 8. Tijuana, Netflix original. And also on April 5th, we have a Brie Larson-directed movie called Unicorn Store, also featuring Samuel L. Jackson. So, not quite Captain Marvel and Nick Fury. I saw the trailer for this, and I don't know what to think. It did not look like it would be for me. But you never know. April 9th, Trolls, The Beat Goes On, speaking of not for me. New Girl, Season 7, April 10th. You vs. Wild, also April 10th. Another movie called Black Summer. I believe that one also features Kieran Shipka. April 11th. April 12th, A Land Imagined, Band-Aid, Huge in France, Mighty Little Beam, The Perfect Date, The Silence, another horror film, I believe, and Special, something called Special. Who Would You Take to a Deserted Island? That looks to be a reality show, Netflix original. On Tax Day, April 15th, Louis Miguel, the series, Season 1, No Good Nick, The New Romantic. April 16th, Super Monsters Forever Friends. Children's programming, it looks like. April 18th, My First Love. April 19th, A Fortunate Man. Brene Brown, The Call to Courage. Cuckoo, Season 5. I, Daniel Blake, Music Teacher. I should check that out because I'm a music teacher. Ryakuma and Kaoru, Netflix original. Samantha, Season 2, and Someone Great. Something called Grass is Greener comes out April 20th. On April 22nd, Pinky Malinky Part 2 and Selection Day. April 23rd, comedy special, I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. April 24th, Bonding. April 25th, Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight extended version. That should be interesting. The Ugly Truth, also that day. April 26th, The Protector, Season 2, remastered, Not your colon getting remastered, but remastered. Devil at the Crossroads, another Netflix original. I won't say controversial, but the newsworthy She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, updated for you here in the 21st century. Season 2 drops that day. Street Food, The Sapphires, and Yankee, also dropping on April 26th. April 27th, American Honey. April 28th, Senora Acero. April 29th, Burning. The Imitation Game, featuring Benedict Cumberbatch. Finally, April 30th, we have Anthony Jeselnik, comedy special called Fire in the Maternity Ward. He's a very funny guy. You ever see him on the Comedy Central roasts, he's usually doing good stuff. Baki Part 2, and finally, Ingress the Animation. Here we go. We're leaving Netflix in April. April 1st, we are losing American Pie, featuring the best actor in America, Chris Klein, among others. Billy Madison from Adam Sandler is leaving that day. Interesting that Billy Madison from Happy Madison Production Company is leaving, because Adam has a contract with Netflix, so I'm kind of curious to see what's going on there. Maybe it's just they don't have the full rights to it. Blue Mountain State, Seasons 1 through 3 is going. And get ready for a list of many James Bond films leaving Netflix service. Of course, they may be available on Hulu. They may be going to Amazon Prime, but if you only have Netflix, you're losing out. Casino Royale, Diamonds Are Forever, Die Another Day, Goldfinger, Happy Gilmore is not there. That was me reading out of order. Of course, Live and Let Die, Octopussy, Living Daylights, Man with a Golden Gun, Spy Who Loved Me and the World Is Not Enough, as well as You Only Live Twice. Those are all James Bond films leaving then. Happy Gilmore, also leaving that day. Happy Feet, Heat, the Michael Mann classic, L.A. Confidential, one of my favorite films. Also losing Luther, Idris Elba, one of the fantastic BBC series you can find on Netflix. Hopefully that will still be around on Amazon Prime or Hulu. Pokemon XY Seasons 1 and 2 is going. 7, David Fincher, modern crime classic, one of my favorite films. I don't know what that says about me because it does not have a happy ending. What's in the box? Sex and the City, the movie. A movie that is almost as gripping and thrilling as 7. Also leaving that day is Wallander. And then April 4, it looks like Eddie Murphy's Raw is leaving. Some of that comedy has not aged that well. Leaving April 7th. Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Clone Wars Seasons 1 through 5. And Clone Wars, The Lost Mission. So you have to imagine that those will all end up on the Disney Plus streaming service when that opens. Leaving April 13th is Video Game High School, Seasons 1 through 3. April 18th loses Silver Linings Playbook, the overrated Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence movie. Now, it's not bad, but I did not like it that much. So that's what's coming and going from Netflix in the month of April. Something that's new on my queue to watch soon is a show from A.D. Bryant, current Saturday Night Live cast member, actress, comedian. She is doing a show on Hulu called Shrill, and I'm going to be checking that out very soon. I've added it to my queue, but I have not seen it yet. So if you've already seen Shrill, let me know your thoughts. Let me know if you think it would be something I would like. I'm going to at least check it out, but it has not been something I've been able to get to. This was a rough week. Still behind on my CW shows and all the things. I've got 2 episodes of This Is Us in the can to watch. It's tough, you know? Something I like to call selection paralysis. There's just so many choices that sometimes we just freeze because the pressure of it. And it's funny, entertainment is not supposed to be this dramatic, but at sometimes entertainment is drowning us. So we're here at Binge Please, looking at things that we think are good, that we've seen, and can recommend to you. And I look forward to your recommendations, too. So if you've seen Shrill, let me know, and I'll get your feedback on the next episode, and I'll let you know how I liked it watching. Something else I'm looking forward to watching soon is The Dirt, a motion picture about Motley Crue based on their book. Most of the Place to Be Nation members who have seen it so far enjoyed it. Some people I have seen online have given it mixed reviews or bad reviews. My friend Skid gave it a very interesting review. Here's his one-sentence review of The Dirt. A shitty movie about a shitty band comprised of shitty people. So, your mileage may vary with The Dirt. I'm looking forward to it. I had some affection for Motley Crue growing up. Certainly not Shout at the Devil that era, but more the Girls, 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 Dr. Feelgood era. That's certainly my wheelhouse, and I do really like Home Sweet Home, kind of the ultimate Motley Crue power ballad. So interesting stuff. I'm sure there will be debauchery of plenty in The Dirt. Now streaming on Netflix. Netflix has decided to not renew One Day at a Time, the traditional sitcom, which is a remake of a 70s sitcom, but recast with a Latina crowd. After 39 episodes, they've decided that the ratings aren't going to get any hotter, and they have pulled the plug. Now, this is a very liked show online, and Broadway's Lin-Manuel Miranda, the genius behind Hamilton, is advocating for a renewal or a move to another network, which who knows how that will work, but Lin-Manuel is kind of a powerful guy in Hollywood, so who knows? Who knows what's going to be happening in the future for One Day at a Time. But it's sad to see it go. I have not watched it, but I have heard good things. I was not a fan of the original incarnation with Bonnie Franklin and Pat Harrington and Valerie Bertinelli, of all people, that have kind of nightmares about those bell bottoms and kind of the weird theme song and all that. But new version was liked by many, so we'll see what happens in the future. Also in Netflix news this week, Stranger Things 3, or at least Season 3, Stranger Things trailer, dropped. And
to many people's delight. I did not watch it, and I'm trying to not get spoiled. I don't want to know anything, much like Star Wars. I don't watch Star Wars trailers. I'm trying not to learn too much about Avengers Endgame, but unfortunately, it seems a lot of those details have found their way into my brain. I am going to wait until July 4th when Stranger Things Season 3 drops on Netflix. Stranger Things, of course, is the teen horror television show based in the 1980s, kind of right in my wheelhouse. Those kids are all the same age I was. My generation, Generation X, arcade going, skateboarding, latchkey kids. So, kind of right. Gets me in the feels, and I've loved the first two seasons, obviously, and I've been very glad to see that. And it was kind of a surprise. It's one of those shows that I didn't know a lot going about when it came out. And loved it from the very first episode. And I know many of my friends, genre fans, are into it as well. So Stranger Things 3 coming soon. There is a trailer, but I am trying to avoid learning anything about Eleven and Mikey and the Upside Down and the Demogorgons and the Demodogs. In other news, Amy Schumer, controversial comedian, has a new special on Netflix, stand-up comedy. Most of her stuff has been on HBO to this point, but now she is, like so many others, signed a deal with Netflix to premiere her comedy and have it on there. I have not seen it. I will probably check it out, but Amy Schumer is somebody who I've seen some pretty good funny stuff from on the Comedy Central network. Most of her show was entertaining, and she's always been good on their roasts, and her stand-up and her movies are fairly polarizing. Some people love it, some people hate it. I enjoyed the John Cena stuff from her first movie, and well, I'll probably check out the new Amy Schumer comedy special, throw it on Netflix as I'm falling asleep one of these nights. Other things I've been watching lately, The Inventor documentary on HBO.
I thought it was very interesting. I enjoyed seeing somebody fail spectacularly,
because I have the Schadenfreude gene in me. I did also watch Leaving Neverland, and I gotta say, I may not have ever been so depressed after watching a show, kind of like Leaving Las Vegas of documentaries, but I don't think I'll ever listen to Michael Jackson music the same way again, and it's gonna be hard. Some people can appreciate the art, but separate it from the artist, like they can watch Chris Benoit matches. I have a hard time with it, just because. And Michael Jackson was part of my youth, part of my childhood, but I know the first cassette tape I ever owned was Michael Jackson Off the Wall. Certainly had Thriller, Bad, Dangerous. Was a big Michael Jackson fan, watched all the videos. Watched Thriller in school, of all places. We had a special assembly, and they showed Thriller to us. That was something. But hearing the stories of the two boys, Wade and Jimmy, and then the interview special with Oprah afterwards, these are haunted men. And I know you have to decide for yourself, but I've certainly decided, and it's going to affect the way I think about Michael Jackson and his music for all of my life. So enough about Leaving Neverland. I think you should see it if you have access to it on HBO. Also, if you have HBO, you should watch Vice News. Vice News is pretty much the only media company news other than, you know, what I'll read on the internet or read from news sources. But I don't like television news. Is it even CNN, Fox, everything seems to be a little bit slanted one way, and you don't really get objectivity. And Vice, I'm sure there's some who say that, yeah, Vice has their own, but I watch Vice News on HBO, and I feel that is as objective a news source that reflects my point of view, or at least asks the kind of questions that I would ask. So if you get a chance to check out Vice News 3 to 4 nights a week on HBO, if you are a subscriber or you have a login to HBO Go or HBO Now. Coming soon from Netflix, a new show from Mindy Kaling. I enjoyed the Mindy Project back in the day on Fox and then Hulu. And of course, I loved Mindy on one of my all-time favorite shows, The Office. Will be nice to see what she comes up with on Netflix. So we'll see what her project is. The last thing I've got is there's a new series or new season of The OA, which is a crazy, crazy show. One of the things my wife will watch and I kind of stay away from. So if you're into that, it has dropped.
So that's it for streaming news coming and going. When I come back from the break, we are going to have our first guest here on Binge Please. And we're going to talk about a movie that you may or may not have seen, but it will be spoilers ahoy, because Jordan Duncan will be joining me to talk about Abducted in Plain Sight. So stick around. I'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
That heals me. Got to see, that's how I dream to be.
Hey, welcome back to the Binge Please podcast. This is Todd Weber on Place to Be Nation Pop. Hope you enjoyed that station break where we heard about both our feeds here on Place to Be Nation, the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed and the pop feed. We did have another busy week on the pop feed. Pop feed is fire. Newest Hard Traveling Fanboys episode, My Charges. Greg and Nick went off the page. They checked out Marvel Rising Secret Warriors animated film featuring Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel. NBA Team Boys, they gave us a quick hit preview of March Madness. This is the first weekend of the tournament, and it's crazy. My bracket is busted. Jason Sherman and David Sunday had a new Sunday Groove come out, and they looked at albums from 98 to 2003. Andy Atherton, Scott Criscolo, J. Arsenio D'Amato, and the Dr. G. They continued their trek through time with a brand new year in pop. They reviewed 1974, when I was 2 years old and Super Friends was coming on for the first time. Ben Morse, that is a very good podcaster. He is a Marvel, former Marvel employee and current professor at UNLV. He hosted Marvel Age Masterclass, talked about 1969 Part 2, and he had me on it. Also, talking about me, I had another show, The Return of Conversation Comics, talking about the Uncanny X-Men, John Byrne and Chris Claremont era in the late 70s and early 1980s, talking about Dark Phoenix. That show's been off for a while and brought it back. So lucky you, you got three episodes of me, actually four if you count Marvel Age Masterclass, four Todd Weber podcasts in 2 weeks. Yikes, that's pretty good. I'm almost to Atherton Smith levels there. Over on Wrestling Feed on PTBN, we had the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast. Speaking of Jennifer Smith, she guest starred with JT and Scott, and they looked at Madison Square Garden house show in February 1989. Justin, JT, I did it again, and Chad, they have a brand new Wrestling Warzone podcast talking about Christmas Night in 1995, featuring the Nature Boy Ric Flair versus Macho Man Randy Savage. Speaking of Ric Flair, he is the subject of Talkin' WCW episode number 3, where Tim Capel, my partner on Conversation Comics, Greg Phillips from the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and the twice aforementioned Jennifer Smith talk about 3 matches from Ric Flair's catalog. Keep checking in with our PTBN Greatest Candy Tournament. Like it on Facebook. Make votes. We are getting through the round of 16, or we're getting down to the round of 16, and we started out March 10th. I'm still pulling for Reese's. I had a tremendous candy bar today. I don't eat a lot of candy, but I did. It was called a Reese's Outrageous, and it featured little Reese's pieces inside. So it was like a chocolate bar, caramel, and then Reese's Pieces, mini ones. It was fantastic. So I encourage you to check that out. All right, lots of great stuff happening on Place to Be Nation, both our feeds. Now it's time for me to bring on my first guest. I am welcoming Jordan Duncan to talk about Abducted in Plain Sight, a movie on Netflix. But there will be spoilers, so you have been warned. Consider yourself warned. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it and you just are curious, listen on. But we do spoil some of the crazy twists that you're going to find out about on this show. So on to the review. We are here talking with Jordan Duncan. Jordan is the host of the Saved by the Bell cast here on Place to Be Nation Pup. He's also the former host of the former show Rank and File. And are there any other podcasts you've done that? Oh, PTBN Play. Talking about video games with Brad. Jordan Duncan, ladies and gentlemen, here he is.
Yes. One of the original Core 4 members.
That's right.
Many of us long since released for our wished well in our future endeavors by Scott Criscolo, but we all left on good terms, I think. So the door is open to come back one day. We've just got to get that reunion, get the band back together, I think.
Yeah.
It would require...
The early days of that show, of Main Event, and you and Ben and Andrew Reich.
Yep. Along with Steve, who's still there.
Steve Willey, the only Core 4 member who was not dismissed summarily.
Yeah, well, Ben's moving all over the country. Andrew's talking basketball, and I'm the lazy one. So I'm the Kevin Nash of the group, I guess. I'm from Michigan, and I'm not known for my work ethic. So
you've certainly got the Kevin Nash hair working for you.
Yeah. Maybe the direct opposite of that.
So we are here to talk about a show, actually a movie documentary, that is available on Netflix. And mm-hmm. even though it wasn't an original Netflix film, it was purchased by Netflix. And most everybody who has seen it on Netflix. I didn't. Yeah. This movie, Abducted in Plain Sight, didn't register with me when it came out in 2017, but I don't, you know, see a lot of theatrical documentaries anymore.
Sure.
So when it came out or was put on Netflix, how did you hear about it? Was there an online buzz?
Yeah, social media, probably Facebook friends. I saw people mentioning it, and I'm a little angry that they didn't give any details because I would have liked to known a little bit about what I was getting myself into. Just kind of the usual, you have to watch this movie. And me and my wife and her best friend Melanie sat down to watch it one night together, and we were surprised with what we ended up seeing. So.
Yes. Yeah, I think every parent should watch it, certainly.
Oh, absolutely.
One time. But we're going to go through, and you're not going to believe how naive the parents of this girl were in the 1970s. But this tells a story of Jan Broberg, mm-hmm. who was a teenager in 1970s Idaho from a Mormon family.
small community who had a next door neighbor who was increasingly involved in her life. And have you ever had a next door neighbor who was on a first name basis with you, would come over, socialize, stay in your bed with you, that kind of thing?
You know, growing up, our neighbors were kind to me and my brother and my sister. Our direct neighbor was Art, staying across the street. I was the paper boy, and he would give me like candy bars. But we didn't have any sleepovers, so, you know, it didn't get much beyond like on Halloween, we got extra candy because we live next door. So,
right.
When, safe neighbors.
I guess the closest thing for me is when my parents divorced and my mom rented an apartment in a neighboring community, another suburb of Sacramento. And our next door neighbor was a man named Kiki, who kind of looked like, I don't know, like he looked like Jose Feliciano meets the Village People. And every time he'd see us, my brother and I, he would give us a dollar or two. Just like, here you go, kid. And then eventually my mom would say to us, don't take his money, just tell him no.
Yeah, we did have a weird situation like that once. It was actually a Sunday school teacher at our church. He taught like the boys class. His name was Terry Jewell. And believe it or not, before we got out here today, I Googled his name and typed sex offender to see if anything ever happened there. And there's a couple Terry Jewels out there, but he taught like the boys class, and how it all went down was he had some sort of contest where whichever one of us won, he would take us to McDonald's, and like three kids tied. So we all wanted to go together, and he got really angry and said, no, we'll go one at a time.
Oh, geez.
And our parents got word of that. There was a sit down meeting without us there, and Terry was no longer at the church after that. So,
wow. Yeah. Your dad had to lay the smack down.
Yeah, like most parents probably should do, which makes this movie startling in comparison.
It is, yeah. Actually, there is a sex offender story. I don't mean to make light of it. From my church, my growing up church, the church I was confirmed in, where my father worked as an organist, and the husband of the lady, the superintendent of the Sunday school, was busted for Santa Clausing these kids. He was a Santa Claus impersonator at the mall, and he was arrested for molesting. And apparently this had gone on for years and years, and there are all kinds of stories. The daughters were creepy. And this is some oogie stuff talking about how close these things were to me. Apparently it was, he preferred little girls, and it's just so gross to think about nowadays.
It really is.
He was put away for life, and good. I believe he died in jail. So we are looking at the story of this family, the Broberg family, Idaho, suburbia, small town, actually. And they were Mormon. So I'm not a Mormon basher. Mormons are great people. I've dated a couple Mormon girls in my life. When my parents split, my mom married a guy who worked in Salt Lake City. So I was a little closer to the Mormon church in the early 80s and interacting with them. And so I think that has to be looked at as part of the naivete of this family.
Definitely.
But it just still rings. Oh my gosh, this is so ridiculous. How you would ever let this creepy next door neighbor who, his name is Robert. What was his last name? Robert.
I just call him B.
B is what we'll call him, because he was also
Berchtold. Berchtold, I think.
And yeah, I'll double check that. I'm not looking at the page right now.
Sure.
But he and his wife, and did he have kids too, or was it just he and his wife?
No, he had kids. I'm remembering pictures. We never heard from them in the film, which I can understand why. But
right,
I believe they had kids.
We hear recordings of his voice throughout and threatening phone calls. Berchtold, yeah, there it is. He was maybe a little younger than this couple that he preyed upon. And his wife was kind of a non-entity in the film, but you have to think that she was in on it, at least for part of it. And I'm sure there's an interesting story there. But he targeted and summarily groomed this woman, Jan, and kind of separated her from her family over time, preyed upon her, and eventually molested her, and then kidnapped her twice, which is just twice.
Yeah.
Once is enough. Twice.
Yeah.
twice is pretty ridiculous.
During the kidnappings, kept in contact with the parents.
Yes.
Like with phone calls and such.
Yeah. Generally in kidnapping stories, they're gone without a trace and, hasta la vista. But no, he was, he said he was taking her on a trip and they were fine with it at first. Is that what I recall?
Yeah. I want to say they were going horseback riding. Is that what the story was?
I think so. Yeah. And then they transferred to his motorhome.
Yep.
So again, don't trust anyone who has a motorhome ever. My grandparents had a motorhome and followed sprint car racing all across America. But, B had a motorhome and, he took Jan down to Mexico and was going to marry her there. And that's where the molestation parts begin.
At 12 years old, yeah.
And she was 12. And he had known her for years, but had been working on her and working on her and eventually turned her against her family at this point. And the creepiest part of the film, we should talk about how the movie uses some home footage and a lot of pictures, but they also reenact with actors.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine that being your big role that you land.
But I think the first major development in the way the story unfolds, because they go back and forth and you hear things that happened earlier chronologically later in the film, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You get to see more of the whole story of how he was manipulating this family, sometimes literally. So, sorry for that one.
It just spilled out. Sorry.
Yeah. So, Jan awakens in the motorhome at 12 years old in restraints, and there's a box that she doesn't recognize is a Radio Shack tape recorder, cassette recorder. And she hears, as she's kind of groggy, I believe she had been drugged, too.
Yeah, had to have been.
Yeah. That...
Oh, no, that's right, because he would give her allergy pills.
Yes. But... Speaking of cold season and allergies.
Right.
I don't think... Well, it was probably like Benadryl and GHB.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah. And she awakens in the middle of the night. She's restrained, hands and feet to the bed.
Yep.
And told by a mysterious, distorted voice that she is half alien. Not the least of which thing, this is not even the most ridiculous thing in the film, but at this point, no. You're just kind of accepting everything because we've seen this story unfold and how increasingly bizarre it gets throughout the story. She's told that she is the half alien daughter of a lost civilization and that she needs to procreate to keep the civilization going or colonize the planet. What was the story?
Essentially just to keep their race alive, I believe. I don't know. I mean, it was enough to fool a 12-year-old girl.
Right. And she talks about how she had been raised on the Christmas story. So the idea of your mother being really your mother, but your father being an otherworldly entity was no big deal to her at that point, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's not how I've ever viewed the Christmas story, but I guess, you know, I mean, it's true. Like, I guess that's true, but I never view it as the father needing to come down and have sex with the daughter.
Right. Not so. The 12-year-old and the aliens tell her that, well, if you don't agree to fulfill the mission, this was a mission that the aliens were telling her she was on, that we're going to go after your sister, who is also half alien. So to do this, we have picked this man, this married, much older man, to lay with you and so do whatever he says. And eventually she acceded to it.
Yep.
Which is just crazy. And we don't hear, thankfully we don't hear too much about I guess she did talk a little bit about it, but it doesn't go into it, say the detail that the Michael Jackson documentary I recently watched.
We're just told that it happens and we kind of move along. And like you said, I mean, it seems foolish that she would believe it, but she's a 12-year-old girl. You know, she's still a kid, and this is the 70s. I don't know that kids now are smarter, but I think there's more access to information. To where I would think, like, my son's 13. I don't think he'd be fooled by anything like this, I hope.
Right.
Just because of technology, you know? Like even like you mentioned, she didn't recognize it was like a Radio Shack, like probably like a CB radio or something, and she couldn't even figure that out. It's crazy.
And we were a generation of latchkey kids, you know? If both your parents worked, you were on your own a lot, and you would play around the neighborhood, and, you know, your parents would see you at dinner, and it was fine, you know? Even me growing up in sometimes bigger cities, it was still fine for me. And I don't know what changed culturally, where that became watch your kid at all times. Because nowadays, I mean, I can't imagine just letting my kids run around and then I'll see you in a little bit.
Right.
I've got a 12-year-old too. And no, I can see him trusting somebody, but I can also see us never letting him have this kind of relationship with anybody ever. I mean, we're...
Certainly not an adult male, you know, or female.
But, so. You know, in video games, we get stories sometimes. People through Overwatch or Fortnite or anything online, these kids will start a direct chat with somebody or be targeted by somebody. But, you know, only in the most extreme cases will it lead somewhere. So you have to really monitor it. But it's out there still.
And even that's usually – someone not connected with mom and dad.
Right.
Usually.
Not being targeted and
groomed, like you said earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something I've learned about last couple of these creepy documentaries is the grooming phenomenon, which I thought was something else. Grooming, I used to think grooming was changing the physical appearance of this person to match what you wanted or you know, make a 12-year-old look older. That's what I thought it was. It's not turning the child against the parents and ingratiating yourself into their life. So Jan protects her sister, at least that's what she's describing it as, by having this relationship with B. And they're in Mexico. They've been gone for days and days. And how did they get back to the States? How did they get tracked down? Was it the FBI that found them?
So I believe that B called to get permission to marry her, did he not?
That's right. He had to get consent to marry
her. He actually called Jan's mom, said, "Hey, we're in Mexico. Can I marry your child?"
Jan's mom, Marianne, who we'll talk about more here.
Oh, yeah. I've got thoughts on Marianne.
Yeah. I got thoughts on Bob and Marianne.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so that's the red flag that they hear. Like that's the one thing that sends them over the edge that, oh no, this is not right. We've got to find our daughter. This is inappropriate all the way.
Yeah. No, she can't get married. She could just spend weeks with him at a time.
Like, you know, and even a culture that is fringe polygamy, you know, there's still the tie to polygamy that the Mormon church has, or some of the fundamentalist groups of the Mormon church have. So I never got the sense that B was all that well regarded in the Mormon community or that Mormonism was a hugely important thing to him. I think it's just, but definitely to the family, they were all in.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's probably why he targeted that.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a lot of people view like a religious type as, like we mentioned already, naive. And I think there's some truth with this family, more trusting than others, and more concerned with their image in their community, which does play a part in this story.
It does. The father, Bob, had a successful flower shop that he ran, and that may come into play with some stereotypes later. But yeah, he was notable in the community. They were well connected in their church, and B just goes for it with this family. He studies and spends time with them, and then he separates the mom and dad and works on them individually too.
Yes, which is where I think this really takes a turn for the wild.
Yeah.
Not to say that the whole story itself isn't wild, but I've seen stories on abduction and kidnapping and things like that. But then when the parents start to talk about their relationship with him, that's when I let out the audible, what?
I've never heard anything like this, ever. Yeah. And I mean, you do, you know, understanding about grooming, you know, the perp targets and tries to destroy everything that's a tie for the girl to her parents. Sure. But to confide in the dad that I'm struggling with things and my sexual aggression, and they go for a drive, and he convinces the dad to give him a hand job.
Yeah.
Out on the road, it's just one day there. He and it's well described. I appreciate the candor that the father uses here, because I've never gone on a drive where that ever came up.
Right. I've had a lot of really good friends over the years. That's never approached my mind with male friends. And as a married man, even, you know, with the female ones, but when he started going there, you kind of got the sense you figured out what was going to happen. And my brain is saying, no,
this is not really the case. This is the case. And
yeah.
Apparently
yeah.
I think B targeted, Bob Broberg as a closet homosexual.
That's what I think as well.
You know, he sees this guy that...
Who's still closeted to this day, I believe.
Well, he passed away.
Yeah, but I mean, at the airing of the documentary and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they stayed in the church. They reconciled their marriage that they, you know, and it just all feels like he was a gay man living a straight man's life and wrestling with those urges.
Right,
In seeing that, and wanting to have a family, wanting to be a father.
Sure.
You don't see a lot of genuine chemistry or affection between Bob and his wife, Marianne.
No.
And B targets this and drives this wedge between them by seducing them each individually, just to erode the trust and to get to Jan, the ultimate goal of getting to Jan. And the FBI agent that they interview, and you just can't believe that the FBI didn't go after him right after as a full court press, like put away this guy for life after the sure. first kidnapping. But they eventually got the charges dropped, which is amazing, because the Brobergs wouldn't prosecute.
Yep.
They wouldn't.
Because of fear of these stories getting out and their reputation within the church and their community being ruined.
Wow. So yeah, this B Berchtold is just amazing. This is a criminal mastermind. I mean, imagine if he had used his powers for good.
Right.
You know, work for the CIA or something.
Yeah. I mean, like even we suspect, you know, that there was like some homosexual tendencies or things like that. But for him to spot that and to see that and use that to his advantage, because it was advantageous. I mean, it's just... It's mind blowing to see that how one man could manipulate really an entire family.
The whole family. Even I don't know his relationship necessarily with the other daughters, or I don't recall.
Sure. Yeah, that's not really explored very much.
But it's then revealed that B was preying upon the vanity of the wife and buttering her up and telling her that you're in this unhappy relationship. I can do so much for you. You're a beautiful woman. You know, he's sensing that she's missing something, and they begin an affair.
Yep.
And just, my goodness, this is so, the sickness is so deep and twisted in this film. I mean, I've given a spoiler warning, and so I assume everybody, if you're listening to this, you're either never going to see it or you've seen it already.
Sure.
But. My gosh, he was,
you know, in a movie about kidnapping and child sexual molestation and things like that, I actually think this was the creepiest part of the story to me, just in the way that her name's escaping me. What's Mrs. Broberg's name?
Is it Marianne?
Marianne.
Yeah.
The way that she retold the story with like a smile on her face.
Uh-huh. With a little bit of joy. Like this was the happiest she had ever been in her life. She's finally found true, you know, somebody who was really into her. And, you know, you can tell that she's got these suspicions about her husband as well.
Right. To me, it's maybe the creepiest part of the whole movie, that this woman just seemed, still to this day, as she recalls it. Like when Bob tells what he did, he's in tears, you know, like he's crying. And she just has this coy little smile, like, and then he took off my blouse, grin. And I'm like, this is the guy that raped the child over and over and over. Like, ugh.
So
it's gross.
It is. And, you know, she and her daughter do these publicity book. You know, they had a book that they shopped, and she and her daughter were still close. And apparently the family definitely reconciled and put this all behind them.
Yeah, I think that's another documentary you can make. How on earth does reconciliation come there? that's a lot of forgiveness for old Jan.
And I think I was somewhat impressed with how Jan presented herself.
Yeah.
You know, the recall, the detail in the stories, and yet pressing on. So I give a lot of credit to the director, the documentarian. But, you know, she's had written a book at this point and had all her stuff together. But she's deeply affected by it. She's obviously very, very upset about it, but she's very healthy with the way that she's presenting this about her. You get the sense that she had to make the choice to either deal with it, put it in her past and move on, or succumb to just this despair, this terrible, terrible thing. And, you know, even though it defines who she is, you can see that she is, I mean, she's a beautiful woman still, you know, taking care of herself and has worked as an actress. So the second kidnapping, after all this had gone down, he gets her again and he takes her to Los Angeles and hides her there. He plants her there under an alias, enrolls her in a Catholic school.
Yep.
And would see her every couple of weeks. But even then he was under surveillance.
Yeah. So he kind of sold to the nuns that he was a FBI agent, a CIA agent, something like that.
Yeah. Top secret.
Golly.
And even though the end was near, he just was getting more and more brazen with this. I mean, he's under surveillance. He disappears from Utah where he's being watched. It feels like, wow, where did he get all this money to do this? I can't relate.
Right.
But
no, certainly not.
And, well, probably my favorite recollection is the brother of B. He's just, he knows what a sicko his brother was, and he's kind of like, well, we did everything we could. We know.
Oh, yeah. They knew he was a perv.
They did. I like the brother quite a bit here because he doesn't mince words. He talks about what a sicko B was.
Yep.
So I think, I'm trying to think anything else we should cover on this. Any questions? You know, what'd your wife think?
We were all just kind of shocked by it. You know, it's just one reveal after another, because again, we went into it just because people were saying this is good, but we didn't really know what it was. And I mean, you can figure out from the title, Abducted in Plain Sight, it's about like someone being kidnapped or something like that, or trafficked or something. So we kind of went in blind, and just learning each piece of the story over and over. At first, you know, sometimes you feel sad. Like, I think anger is the overriding emotion as you watch the movie. Anger, not just with B, who is the criminal, but with the parents who just really allowed it to happen. Like, you know, B is a criminal, and not to excuse his behavior, he's wrong, he should be in jail forever. Actually, he's passed away too, correct?
Yes, his death is covered in the film. He committed suicide in jail.
That's right. But, you know, there may even be some mental issues there. Not to say that he can't help himself, but...
Or was abused as a child.
Right, absolutely. But these parents who willingly let this happen and who put the girl on a plane to see him and who let the guy stay in her room over and over and over as his therapy.
Yep.
It's just maddening.
Yeah, we should talk about that, that he presented a psychiatrist saying this is what he needs.
Yeah. To them. To stay in Jan's room 4 or 5 nights a week.
Oh, it makes you think, what's wrong with these parents? What's wrong with this? How do you ever get to this point? You know, as a parent, I just don't relate. I can't imagine this happening. And yet it did. Right.
And we've used the word naive a few times because, again, you know, it's 40 years ago. Right. Technology's not there. But come on. You know, naive only goes so far, you know. Yeah. And I think their own, I guess, self-preservation, for lack of a better term, their own concern with what others would think of them overrode their care for their daughter, which is why you get angry with them. Like, they put their daughter in the situation just so their secrets wouldn't get out. And it's like, listen, tell your secrets, man. Tell your secrets and keep your kids safe. If I had a secret that, you know, would shame me and shame my family, but it meant my kids wouldn't endure trauma, then I'd deal with the shame. You know, I'd like to think that I would. So, by the way, one thing that we discussed, and I'm kind of watching it on mute with the captions on as we're talking, the mission was for her to have a baby.
Yes.
And the baby would save the alien race.
That's so, right. So, yeah. And if Jan's kind of framed into doing this, if we don't get it from you, we're going to go after your family. So she justifies it by saying, I've got to take care of my sisters by doing this.
Right.
But eventually, you know, you listen to her, like, voice recordings and telephone recordings. She becomes kind of a bratty teenager.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't blame her. I mean, every teenager goes through a rebellious phase, but she really goes off against her family and acts like, as a 16-year-old, she's pretending, acting like she's much older. And,
right.
And I can make all these decisions for myself. And just, oh, how did this happen? But she came off to me as, I mean, it's like a perfect storm. I know that's a cliche, but she had the personality and the, I don't want to say narcissism, but the ego that this was everything she wanted in some way too.
Right.
It just sucks.
Right. Which again, speaks to B
yep.
grooming her because she had sisters. And he chose her, you know? So him getting close to the family, he probably saw in her personality, well, I could convince her, you know, which is just more mind into another peek into his sick mind. But yeah, there's just so much that there's so many points where you think, well, if they'd done this, it would have stopped. Or if they'd done this, it would have stopped. If they'd done this, it would have stopped. And I don't place any of the blame on Jan. Like, yeah, she could have went to her parents and said, this is what's happening. But she was a kid. She was fooled. She believed if she told, I think her parents would die, right? Like, they would be zapped up or something like that.
He would hurt. You know? They would be hurt. And B gets desperate, and he eventually burns down the father's business.
Oh, gosh. I'd even forgotten about that part, to be honest. Like, it is wild. It is wild.
I mean, for it not to have ended there.
Right. It's like, well, maybe we'll give him one more shot.
Yeah. I mean, everything was traceable. I mean, the FBI, you feel like they could have done more, but then you look at the legal system and the way the parents were framed and didn't want their secrets to get out. The FBI couldn't move on this without their cooperation until I don't know what the big difference was the second time. If the parent, you know, what if the parents had said, come out and said, we don't, they were still okay with it. I mean, they at this point they knew that this was wrong and they were willing to be exposed. Right. I think.
Yeah. I don't remember his name, but the FBI agent that we hear from in this movie, I think is like our voice.
Yeah,
because you can just hear the disgust in his voice as he talks about this family, like just the shock as he reveals like things that they withheld and would refuse to do to help the investigation. Just
much. I know there's so much ooginess about the whole thing.
Yeah,
But, and I still think people should watch it, especially parents should watch it and just go.
Oh, absolutely.
Man, we've come a long way.
Yeah, you know, we have, and that's my thought is, could something like this ever happen again? And the thought would be like, no, because like things that I've said, like technology and this and that. But as you mentioned, we still hear stories of kids being, what's the term? I don't know, catfish or something online, right. You know, and you still see kids who are intelligent kids, who are mature kids falling for these things because they're kids. I'd like to think the parts that couldn't happen is that a mother and father would both willingly allow it to happen.
Uh-huh.
But that's maybe just me having a little too much faith in humanity.
I know. I've seen some pretty crappy things. And, you know, right. we get these
right.
parents, maybe on the other side of things, these overly involved stage parents or, you know, Little League parents who are willing to do anything to get their kid on the team or
in, right.
And so, yeah, I don't have that much faith in humanity. Pete Welch, that's the lead FBI agent from there.
Pete Welch, okay.
I found where he is introduced. And it's really nice that they had access to him and his perspective because
yeah.
it helps frame the documentary in a way that you get a lot of the perspective. And you get somebody who is, like you said, saying the things that you're thinking. Like,
right.
What on earth is wrong right. with these people?
It's so, just... And even that, too, I think what's kind of interesting, again, I guess maybe how we've changed, is that an affair is enough to allow your daughter to go through this. You don't want to find out about an affair. Not to say that, like, affairs are encouraged nowadays or anything like that, but I think maybe they're a little more commonplace, or maybe it's a little more
yeah.
understood that it happens. Or you
that's,
know?
That, to me, is kind of the event horizon for divorce in America was the 70s. People started – you started seeing divorce – along with the sexual revolution,
sure.
The pill, you just saw these things being a little bit more accepted. And so, you know, they were happening. People had affairs forever as long as,
right.
But for these things to be come out into the open and to end marriages or
right.
be dealt with instead of just swept under the rug and, you know, silent resentment for the rest of your marriage.
Right.
Sometimes you'd have an affair and it would go away or you'd get counseling and deal with it. Other times, often in the 70s, when the divorce rates skyrocketed, people were say, "This, I'm just not happy. Screw my kids, screw my family. I'm blowing the whole thing up and starting over."
Sure.
And
so, I do think, though, one thing I think is a little behind the times in most cultural things, it has always been the church. Now, I know they're part of the Mormon church, but as part of the Christian church, I think that divorce is – for a long time was kind of looked at as, you don't do that. You put up with anything, which I don't think is a healthy way to view things. You know, I don't think divorce is always the best option, but sometimes I think it's the necessary option, you know, especially if one party involved or both are, you know, being victimized or being abused or enduring things. And I wonder if that's part of it, too. You know, in the 70s and the Mormon church, I think especially divorce was probably not even an
right.
option to them.
Right,
you know,
you'd get excommunicated, so you'd be shunned.
Right.
You know, it's still not that common. It's from what I know about Mormonism today.
Right.
But back then, it was very taboo.
Oh, yeah. Almost as taboo as, you know, driving your friend out on the road and jerking him off.
Yeah. Which has become a meme, a great
yeah.
meme.
Yeah, what's the most you've ever done for a friend?
You just have to. We see a still picture of Bob.
Yeah, hands
folded his across
hands
his lap.
Out. Yeah.
Yep.
So, oh, God.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed talking about this uncomfortable subject with you, Jordan.
Yeah.
Again, recommendation if people have seen it,
absolutely.
Convince other people to see it because. Raises important issues. Yeah.
It does. Yeah. I mean, we kind of like joke about it, but I think it is important to watch to see what people are capable of, you know, and to see the repercussions that you have for hanging on to your own personal
mm-hmm.
vanity or personal beliefs, you know, especially as a parent, you kind of have to sacrifice that sometimes.
So we've enjoyed talking about it. Where can people track you down besides your podcasts?
Well, I'm going to be moving to Idaho soon. I got a friend who's opening a flower shop.
Very good.
I'm going to give him a hand.
Oh, geez. Well played.
No, you can find me on Twitter. Let me see what my Twitter handle is. I believe I'm
mstarjd.
mstarjd. M-S-T-A-R-J-D. You can find me on there. Facebook, I probably won't add you unless I already know you, so don't bother with that. But yeah, our Saved by the Bell podcast is coming back. We've only done one episode. We had to go on hiatus for some things, but Aaron and I are in the works. I've forced him to watch a second episode, and we'll be back for some more rage there.
This would be a very special episode of Saved by the Bell, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, B could be Belding.
He could.
Mr. B. Belding, you know.
Mr. Belding's secret life.
I think we've just figured something out. Well, we did talk about in the first episode how there's a lost first season where Zach and Lisa and Screech, I think, all were living in Indiana. And then the second season, they're in California. And for some reason, Mr. Belding was their principal in both states. So he's following across the country.
The things that we would not allow on our TV these days. Like, that would make no sense, but...
Yeah. Yeah. It would be raked across the coals for that.
The show got retooled. What a remarkable coincidence that Belding... See, we're writing fanfic now to explain it away, how that all happened in continuity.
Right.
I have to confess, Saved by the Bell is... I'm a little old for it. It was not in my cultural blind spot. I mean, it is in my cultural blind spot, early 90s. But I did listen to that first episode. Very enjoyable, and I look forward to more.
Thank you. So, yeah, I look forward to listening to some more Binge Please.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being my first ever guest here on Binge Please. I'll be back in a couple weeks to talk more stuff about streaming TV, streaming cable services, shows, movies, things you can only watch on streaming. I will be revealing my next guest very soon, but thanks for joining us here on the latest episode of Binge Please, only on Place to Be Nation Pop.